Paper 6, Section 6, which is old single column page 78. So we got the sequentiality just to happen in there. Okay. Three cards straight. With a pair of sixes. all right. And that's probably the last thing we're going to understand, you know, because we're going to start reading about spirit mind next. And there's nothing but deep mystery in spirit mind. But that's where we are here. We'll probably wrap up this paper tonight. It's fairly straightforward, but we'll see that they've got a treat for us coming up in Section 8. So let's see, I think... let's just jump in and we'll talk about it a little bit here once we get going.
6, the spirit mind. The eternal Son is spirit and has mind, but not a mind or a spirit which mortal mind can comprehend. Mortal man perceives mind on the finite, cosmic, material, and personal levels. Man also observes mind phenomena in living organisms functioning on the subpersonal animal level. But it is difficult for him to grasp the nature of mind when associated with supermaterial beings and as a part of exclusive spirit personalities. Mind must, however, be differently defined when it refers to the spirit level of existence and when it is used to denote spirit functions of intelligence. That kind of mind which is directly allied with spirit is comparable neither to that mind which coordinates spirit and matter, nor to that mind which is allied only with matter.
Okay, so just a little bit there. I mean, obviously, it's just like I said. I mean, there's a lot of mystery in the mindedness of the eternal Son, fundamentally, that last little thing that they're saying is what we always try to ground our understanding in. That just is a straight energy fact. For instance, we have spirit substance, and we have matter. We have these two substances, and there's an energy that is the super additive consequence of the relationship between the two, and hence is the means of bridging the gap between the two so that the two can come into relationship. There's no way that we could have a relationship with spirit ministries like the Holy Spirit or the Spirit of Truth, you know, or a spirit individuation, spirit entity like a thought adjuster. There wasn't something that could bridge that differential between the fact of spirit and the fact of the very material nature that we are. And so there's that whole hierarchy of mind that extends up from the lowliest of the low to the highest of the high, the thought adjuster. And, you know, so when so that basic bit of it coordinates spirit and matter. It's like, okay, yeah, that's what I'm always looking for as my anchor point to try to understand what's going on with mind. But you notice they throw in nor to that mind which is allied only with matter. When we think about our mind, we always immediately think about the creative mother spirit engaging us with her sevenfold adjutant mind ministry. It's a mystery too, but sevenfold mind ministry. But we're told that there's one aspect of this ministry that she hands off, doesn't do directly herself, to the master physical controllers, in particular the mechanical controllers. She hands off that lowest mind ministry of mechanical mind. And so there's just that fact that she hands that off. I mean, it's, you know, should be suggesting to you that there might be some separation there that you would observe, at least, you know, to all appearances, in nature. And that's what, you know, they're alluding to. I mean, if you just have a properly constructed molecular structure, like a plant, or even something as simple as a prokaryote, a bacteria, I mean, you don't think of that as really, you know, in any sort of immediate direct way, as having some hierarchy that goes all the way up, you know, to spirit. I mean, it's just this matter with this mechanical mind engaged to it. But it is mind. You know, it's just that, you know, in immediate manifestation, you know, there's no obvious way to understand it as some sort of a coordination between spirit and matter. I mean, obviously, you know, those who are bestowing it are connected to spirit. So, you know, out of sight, there is. But in terms of, you know, just the immediate appearances. So, they're saying, okay, so, I mean, that's really kind of all you can, you know, you have any way of sort of directly experiencing with mind. Like they're saying up there at the beginning, you know, we obviously only have a direct experience with finite mind. We do have the Holy Spirit, which gives us a foretaste of, you know, a little bit of some higher mind, you know, since it's kind of that core thread that's coming down from the cosmic mind. Doesn't really get downstepped, you know, per se, just sort of gets fed down to us. But it's material. It's very much material mind, like they're saying, but it is personal. So that, you know, that brings in a little something, you know, but you have finite cosmic material and personal levels. But obviously, you know, we're all familiar that in the book, they talk about a vast diversity of beings that are, you know, radically different than anything we can, you know, we have any direct experience. And all those beings have to be minded in ways that are going to be deeply mysterious to us and whatnot, and don't really fit any of these sorts of labels. But in the midst of all of that complexity, there is a singular example of a very curious mind, and that's the mind of the Eternal Son. And so that's the main point of what they're getting at here. So just, you know, in other words, I mean, other than the personal, you know, and that little thread of cosmic, it's all pretty lowly. This is kind of basically the point of that. You know, a little father and a little mother bringing some higher elements in, but it's, you know, it's a little bit, you know, it's basically of a pretty lowly nature. But nonetheless, you know, as we'll see, I mean, just that, like I said, the main thing is just, you know, to understand if there's mind, you know, try to figure out, okay, where's the matter and where's the spirit? So that I can understand that there's this associative phenomenon going on between the two. Let's see, anything else in there?
So on that cosmic mind, in the intro, you say only through the individuality of the whole. That would be our connection to the cosmic mind.
Yeah, you have this, you know, you start with the whole, the supreme mind, and it's, you know, the whole grand universe, and you just have these this hierarchical downstepping to get it down to us, and that last linkage is the creative mother spirit bringing it down. Yeah.
And the personal level, I mean, the father is even higher than the son, technically, but there's right. The personal. Circuit.
Right, but yeah, just, and the main thing there in terms of mind is just that you have a mindal self, but there's a personality engaging that mindal self. And so, thread by thread, that self can become personalized by the action, the identification of that. So, on the one hand, you have sort of just mind, and more you can have personalized mind, you know, and so there can be levels of personal mindedness, you know, as opposed to just levels of mindedness in and of itself. So that's what they're getting at.
When you mentioned prokaryotes, I was thinking of the life carriers came to this planet, built these little machines, and then they have a special relationship with Nebadon, the local mother, and so she then, through them,
The way that works technically, so now with the prokaryotes, that's the master physical controllers doing. You know, they're little power plants. The master physical controllers are the designers and builders of those. In particular, the primary associators. They're the
Not the life.
Yeah, I'll explain it in a second how they come in. Okay. So the actual molecular structure, the single loop of DNA that a prokaryote has, all that is designed and built to terraform this, you know, the particular planet they're on. Those first, you know, some of the very first beings that arrive are those primary associators. And once they had things constructed, that scouting party showed up. And in that scouting party, so here are some life carriers who, they don't have to be modified at all, but just their presence there endows that that basic life animation, the living vitality, that first phase of life animation that prokaryotes need to become animate. Right. They're not eukaryotes. They don't need to reproduce. They don't need the reproductive spark. So the life carrier doesn't have to go through that transformation so that the reproductive spark can be bestowed. That doesn't happen until 550 million years ago. But so, way back, 900 million years ago, you've got that happening.
Okay. So what I'm thinking of is you've got this dead machine,
mm-hmm.
and then you've got a live machine.
Right.
And because it was constructed by the beings that the mother passed
right, on, assigned to this job, right?
Assigned to the job of mind.
Yep.
So the mind came from the builders.
Yeah, I mean, you got two different master physical controllers. You have the primary associators actually building it, designing it and building it, and then you have the mechanical controllers actually minding it.
There we go, okay. But that happens after it's alive.
Yeah, I mean, the instant that the life animation engages it, you know, the mind latches onto it. So, yeah.
Yep.
So when something is minded, that's not the thing that puts the living vitality into it. It's something else that does?
It's the life carriers that are the means by which, you know, that measure of connection to the infinite. Remember, life animation is coming from that reservoir, the infinite. You know, and there's this long, mysterious conduit of transference down from the infinite level all the way down to, you know, some mud ball, you know, in space and time that's slowly, you know, evolving to be able to have life, you know, it just literally tells you that, like, when the life carriers are in their lab, you know, they can build, you know, simple little things, and just their normal presence and their normal state, it just comes through them, and they're animate.
Well, isn't that called the breath of life, too?
Right, I mean, and it's called that just simply because we have that old expression, you know, humans, you know, going all the way back to the Andonites, you know, trying to understand the mystery of our nature, and they're going, well, the first thing that strikes my attention is this breath thing, because I notice that the breath stops when the person dies, and, you know, so it must be the spirit, you know, and so, you know, there's this long-standing association between breath and spirit, and so we have this expression, the breath of life, and so they play off of that, you know, use that old expression. Anagar, you know, called God the breath giver, because that's what, you know, the people, you know, 900,000 years ago, you know, could comprehend, you know, for a name for God. And, yeah. But you know, technically, you know, it has nothing to do with respiration. You know, it's just, you know, there's this very, you know, ethereal essence of reality that really is the infinite engaging the matter and making it animate. But, you know, the matter has to be just so constructed. It doesn't engage any old matter. You know, doesn't engage a gold brick. Doesn't matter how shiny the brick is, it still is just dead as a doornail. So it has to be very precisely constructed, and then this mystery happens that the infinite touches it via the life carrier. Okay.
Spirit is ever conscious, minded, and possessed of varied phases of identity. Without mind in some phase, there would be no spiritual consciousness in the fraternity of spirit beings. The equivalent of mind, the ability to know and be known, is indigenous to deity. Deity may be personal, pre-personal, super-personal, or impersonal, but deity is never mindless, that is, never without the ability to at least communicate with similar entities, beings, or personalities. The mind of the eternal Son is like that of the Father, but unlike any other mind in the universe, and with the mind of the Father, it is ancestor to the diverse and far-flung minds of the conjoint Creator. The mind of the Father and the Son, that intellect which is ancestral to the absolute mind of the third source and center, is perhaps best illustrated in the pre-mind of a thought adjuster. For though these father fragments are entirely outside of the mind circuits of the conjoint actor, they have some form of pre-mind. They know as they are known. They enjoy the equivalent of human thinking.
Okay. So that first thing, the mind of the eternal Son is like that of the Father. Okay, in what sense? All right, so like I said, I mean, whenever you try to start thinking about mind, you always start, okay, if I'm going to understand this, there's got to be something on the matter side and something on the spirit side, and the mind is this is a consequence of the association between them. Okay, so what's the problem with the Father and the Son? Well, in the case of the Father, you know, his fact lies prior to the separation into matter and spirit. You know, he's undifferentiated in that way. So that's kind of mysterious. Like, well, how do I think about mind if I don't have that separation that I'm bridging? And it's even more mysterious in some ways. But like they're saying, it is like the Father in this way that. So on the when you have the aisle on this side and the Son on this side, the Son is purely spiritual, just like the aisle is purely material. Okay? So you have this purely spiritual fact. It's not some high absonite blending of material and spiritual energy or something like that. It's purely, absolutely purely spiritual. So how am I supposed to understand that there can be mindedness here? I mean, there's no material energy-like fact at all, not one iota. What could possibly be being bridged where there would be mindedness? Okay, so that's the commonest, the common mystery between the two. However, at least in the case of the Father, you can begin to see how you might have a notion of where the Father's mindedness comes from, because after all, you have the whole Father, whole God the Father, all those different facets, those six different facets, and one of the facets is the universal Father, which is engaging the purely spiritual fact, the eternal Son, and one of the facets is the universal controller, which is engaging the purely material fact of the aisle. So at least with the Father, you have those two faces that you could imagine there might be some sort of a linking, a unifying phenomenon, so that the Father is still one, and it's not schizophrenic with those two faces. Okay, so at least there's a beginning of a sense. But wow, the mind of the Eternal Son is just very mysterious. I mean, I don't even have that to work with. So that's the main thing in play. Now, you notice they bring in the conjoint actor, conjoint creator, third source and center. We always talk about how you can think about there's the personal creator side coming from the universal Father through the eternal Son over to the conjoint actor, the personal creator side of the third source and center. And then there's the universal controller aisle side, which is the impersonal power controller side, it comes over to the third source and center as the infinite spirit, and the two are together as one. If those two, one on the spirit side and one of them on the energy side are going to be together as one, there must be a really definitive mind fact that links those two together as one fact. Yeah, I mean, literally, you take the absolute matter of the aisle and the absolute spirit substance of the body of the eternal Son, the relationship between those two substances is at the absolute mind of the conjoint actor. Okay, and that's why you sometimes can call the conjoint actor the absolute mind. You don't just say like it does here that he has the absolute mind. You know, you can say he is the capital A, capital M, absolute mind. He's the absolute mind. You know, in the same way that you can call the eternal Son the absolute spirit. But then again, therein lies the problem. You know, if that's all the Son is just the absolute spirit, where does the mindedness come in? Okay.
But if you designate the know and be known feature,
right,
not just the associative thing, which may not be precise enough.
Right. Now, yeah, I mean, you know, they always say that because, you know, the notion of the eternal Son would be completely illogical if the Son doesn't have consciousness. I mean, knows and can be known and, okay. There's one little clue that you perhaps could remember that you might say, well, now maybe there's a starting point, at least for me to know that in some deeply mysterious way, one could understand the mindedness of the Son. I don't know if you remember up there in paper 102, you know, one of the religion papers, there's a simple little statement. It says, mind is unity. Well, the way we usually talk about that, understand that, you know, it's kind of the same unity as here. This is not pure unity we're talking about. This is the tri-unity of, you know, bringing the threefold actuality into harmony, you know, via personality. When you think about the mind being the super additive consequences of the relationship between matter and spirit, there's a unity there. It's super additive, so it encompasses that and brings it all together into one fact, a unity. It's not a pure absolute unity, but, you know, when all is said and done, there's a unity. Mind is this means by which there can be unity in the midst of that difference between matter and spirit. If you just say it that way, mind is unity, period. It's like, well, recognizing about the eternal Son. We keep saying that he's the absolute of unity, just like the isle's the absolute of individuality. Well, so, I mean, yeah, okay, he's the absolute spirit, but another way, if you think about it, he's the absolute of unity. He's the anchor point of unity. So that just is, you know, is suggestive. You know, I bet if I had a higher perspective on things, I could link that, I could follow that. You know, if mind is unity and he is the unity, there must be a way to understand it. See that? So just, that would be the where you would begin to try to understand. And they even kind of give you a little clue to that right here, or towards that too. When they say, the equivalent of mind, the ability to know and be known, is indigenous to deity. What's the fundamental quality of deity? Unity. See, there it is again. See, so...
no unity that can't be minded.
Right, so some way or another, see, instead of taking this kind of bottom-up point of view where you have matter and spirit, and there's probably a way of achieving a more top-down point of view and understanding mind and seeing the eternal Son as sort of the quintessential expression of that vantage point view on what mind is. So that's just a thought for speculation. Let's see. And then the bit about the thought adjusters. So, they're just reminding you, if you've got this fragment of the Father, you've got this thing that, you know, that is a fact that's prior to separation between matter and spirit. So it, again, has this, But, again, you know, just like the Father, we have an immediate way that's like, well, yeah, but I can kind of, even if I can't understand it very easily, I can at least begin to see a very immediate possibility for the mindedness of an adjuster, because we know that at the same time that you can call it pure spirit, you can call it pure energy. So, you know, innately what it is, just like the Father, it has both of those, you know, together as one in some mysterious pre-separation way. You know, it is both. You know, if you take all the Father fragments, lay them out in front of you, and you turn them all around, you have the fourth charge of space. You have pure energy. They're one and the same thing. And so in that differential, you know, just is the concept of mind, concept of the bridging. So, yeah, but see, you're left with the really deep mystery of the sun. There's just nothing like the sun, like they're saying. It's an absolutely unique fact in terms of trying to understand mindedness, you know, and that's the sun.
As far as the unity and the sun, is the spirit gravity, is our probably only connection with the sun at this point, is via spirit
gravity. Yes, it is, yes. Yeah, and that's why that's the very first thing they cover, you know, in the next paper, you know, bringing up that spirit gravity. And again, see, that the immediate understanding of that is being seated in section 8 here. We're going to bring that out. You know, there's something that we've already recognized that begins to make this a little bit more immediately understandable. All right.
The eternal sun is wholly spiritual. Man is very nearly entirely material, therefore much pertaining to the spirit personality of the eternal sun, to his seven spiritual spheres encircling paradise, and to the nature of the impersonal creations of the paradise sun, will have to wait your attainment of spirit status following your completion of the Marantia ascension of the local universe of Nebadon. And then as you pass through the super-universe and on to Havona, many of these spirit-concealed mysteries will clarify as you begin to be endowed with the mind of the spirit, spiritual insight.
So the word endowed is kind of like a gift or grace or something.
Right. It's, I mean, just again, the fact of mind, it's always an endowed fact. It's not somehow innate in matter. You know, it's not the functioning of the brain. It's a fact that engages, you know, the adjutants one by one engage you. You are endowed with the first adjutant, then you're endowed with the second adjutant, and all the way on up. You're going to be endowed with Marantia mind all the way up through the local universe. And then, like they're saying here, you know, you begin to start to have, you know, when you're at the super universe level, you're being engaged directly by the full, unindividuated, unfaceted cosmic mind, which from our current perspective, you know, is such a unified fact. You know, mind is unity. It's such a unified fact relative to our current experience with mind that, you know, a lot of times we don't even really call it mind. We call it spirit. You know, the Holy Spirit is kind of the core unity essence of that mind coming down. You know, and we'll talk about being in a spirit womb of the Master Spirit. But, you know, that's just sort of your kind of initial sense. We've already kind of pushed that a little bit. It's like, well, now technically, you know, you're in a mind womb at the super universe level too. That's why it's called a universe. You know, the seven reflective mother spirits together as one form a mind womb. You know, they're the ones that you know, it's like so many things. They avoid these really complicated technical details in everywhere in the book except in the Supreme Papers. And then finally, when you get to the Supreme Papers, they say, now, well, technically, you know, the way we've been talking about it was a little bit of a fudge. Technically, the way it works is those reflective spirits are the ones that actually minister the cosmic mind. The mother ministers the cosmic mind, just like you know here, Creative Mother Spirit ministers the mind. Same way up there. It's not literally the Master Spirit. You know, because the relationship between the spirit activities and the energy activities of the master spirits and the power supreme power directors, that relationship is the cosmic mind, which is ministered by reflective mother spirits. You know, that's technically the way it works. So you know, it's just a reminder that once you start thinking about that more in more detail, when you get up there, you'll have a whole new perspective. You know, and you'll be minded and you'll be reaching for an even higher unity that you'll be calling spirit. Whereas now what you'll be calling mind then is really what you call spirit now because it's so unity relative to this.
You don't get it without doing something.
Well, we have to supply the favorable conditions,
right,
you know, to be grown, and when she grows you, she immediately minds you, right, at a higher level. Yeah.
So it is, yeah, a dual thing.
Yeah. Know? Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, in all this, I mean, you're always giving permission, you know, to this whole process, with your free will.
Sure.
I mean, so, yeah. But just, you know, just notice, see, just think about what I was just saying about cosmic mind and stuff, and just notice the way they worded that there. You know, we know that we have these three cosmic intuitions in the Holy Spirit. That's that thread of the unity coming down from the core of the cosmic mind. And we call that third intuition the spiritual insight. See the last words there? See, they're just reminding you that when you get all the way up there, what now is just this little thread coming down. You know, I mean, right. I mean, you have the whole cosmic mind, which has a unity like the highest unity of the highest thing you know now. The whole mind is like that. You know, the sixth level of meaning, sort of highness of the third cosmic intuition. So that's just what they're alluding to there. You know, the mind of the spirit, the mind that now seems like spirit to us because it's so high. All right. So, and like they mentioned, of course, you know, you really get into the spirit ascension when you get into Havona. Versus just a spiritual preparatory school. So, yeah. All right. Why don't you go ahead and read some more there? Yeah.
7. Personality of the Eternal Son. The Eternal Son is that infinite personality from whose unqualified personality fetters the Universal Father escaped by the technique of Trinitization, and by virtue of which he has ever since continued to bestow himself in endless profusion upon his ever-expanding universe of creators and creatures. The Son is absolute personality. God is Father personality, the source of personality, the bestower of personality, the cause of personality. Every personal being derives personality from the Universal Father, just as the original Son eternally derives his personality from the Paradise Father.
Okay. So even though we don't often put the word infinite up front, you know, we call him the Eternal Son, not the Infinite Son, and we've talked some about that. You don't want to think of him as a reservoir, like we do other facets. But nonetheless, you know, he is an infinite personality. It is a fact that he is an infinite being. Okay, but he's, you know, in terms of understanding the cosmos, he's the absolute spirit, the absolute personality. But that, you know, it is as an infinite being. And then, you know, and so then they, you know, they go to that. So then this whole bit about the last line, you know, that the Eternal Son got his personality just like you did. You have an actuality, a self, that's brought into existence, and then it's personalized. You know, the Father reaches into the reservoir of all will, takes out a measure, you know, separates it from the reservoir, and bestows it. There's one measure out of that reservoir that he can withdraw, which has the ability to engage something that's purely spiritual and absolute and personalize it. There's only one such measure, and he ladles that out and bestows it upon the Eternal Son. But each of us, there's a unique little measure that he ladles out and bestows on each of us. Okay, so the Son, the personality of the Son is just like we understand our personality. One of the ways we understand what personality is: individuated will. The reservoir of all will, you individuate, you separate out from it and bestow. There's one being that really isn't like that. The Father. The Father doesn't have individuated will. The Father is unindividuated will. I mean, if you want to think about the Father when all is said and done in eternity and everything is in existence, You know, you take that whole reservoir and you individuate out everything that you can individuate out, and the part that can't be separated, the part that's stuck to the container, that's him. Okay? Doesn't matter how much you scrape the ladle, there's some of that will that can't be individuated. That's the Father's unindividuated will. Or, you know, in terms of that face that he really puts forward as the bestower of personality, the universal Father face, we understand that to be self-personalized deity. Or in other words, you know, if you sort of just conceptualize, well, what if he did individuate that stuff that, you know, is actually unindividuatable? What would happen? If he did individuate it and tried to bestow it, what would happen to it? It'd come right back. Self-personalized. okay. No matter how much he would try to put it out, you know, and it's important to actually think of him like that. He really tried to put everything out. And the only thing that, you know, the only things that didn't find their mark are the things that just couldn't. He tried, but some of it, you know, is just his. Yeah. So there's some things that he can't delegate because they're just undelegatable. But it doesn't mean in the infinite beneficence that is the Father, he didn't, you know, you shouldn't think of him trying to. He tried to give everything. He gave everything that is givable to the last measure.
He wasn't being stingy.
Yeah.
So the Eternal Son, who always was and always will be, has an infinite personality which is related to space.
I mean, there's many things to challenge your mind with here. For instance, you know, we've talked about thinking in the infinite eternal ellipse, and you're following it back towards the first functional level, and you're heading towards infinity. You follow it towards the seventh, and you're heading towards eternity, but then eternity and infinity meet. And eternity turns into infinity, and infinity turns into eternity. I mean, so in that really abstract sense, you know, there really isn't a distinction. But it was Jim that was just pointing out. I mean, the Eternal Son has a definitive spirit presence as the Eternal Mother Son. You know, that's a spirit presence. And that presence is infinite. It has no bounds. The cosmos infinite will not, you know, expand outside of those bounds. So, you know, I mean, that's one immediate way that you can understand only an infinite, he's definitely a personality, and only an infinite being could have such an infinite presence. Now, there's also the sense of the intent of a person, the intention of a person, you know, not just the extent, but the intent. He has infinite intent as well, because only infinite intent could roll out across all of eternity. If he had a limited intent, you know, his purposing would only go so far, and then what? How do we get the rest of the way to eternity? You know, so both intensively and extensively, he's an infinite personality. He has to pervade it in every way in order for all things to be. That whole bit about unindividuated will, the Father personalities, you know, that's what they really is kind of the technicality behind calling him a Father personality. You know, the Father is an absolute being, but it's not technically right to really refer to him as, you know, as the absolute personality. He's the volitional absolute, but you shouldn't call him the personality absolute, because you're wanting to really, you know, most, by and large, you want to really use the word personality for individuated will. And there's just this one exception, you know. So if you have to use the word personality, stick the word Father in front of it just to remind you that, you know, it's a source of personality, a bestower of personality, a cause of personality, but really as a personality, he's unique, even relative to the Eternal Son. Yeah.
The Son sees eye to eye with the Father.
Yeah.
Grox the Father, understands.
Because he's an infinite personality.
Right. So he can understand the Father personality, not just that portion of the Father that is that is understandable by an absolute personality.
I mean, you be careful with that thought. I mean, they can see eye to eye, you know, up at that level, but the eternal Son can't see things that the Father can see. The eternal Son can see every spirit fact in a potential infinity, but the Father can see all facts. Not just spirit facts, but also material facts. So, is as incredibly transcendent of us as the Eternal Son is, it's still valid to think in terms of, I have an absolute unique relationship to the Father. There is a face of the Father that only I can see. And there is a face of the Father that only the Eternal Son can see as well. Each of us are the behold a facet of the infinite mystery of the Father. He's reserved a facet of His infinite mystery just for each of us, just for the Eternal Son, for instance. There's a unique mystery of infinity that only they share. That's what makes them, you know, that eternal, personally linked fact. It's just theirs, what they share. Because they don't share that with anyone else, that's why it can be a part of infinity and eternity, because of that absolute linkage like that. It's why, you're talking about the absolute personality. Well, you have seven dimensions of your personality, and one of those dimensions is absolute, so that you can be linked to the Father just like the Eternal Son is. You know, the difference is every dimension of the Eternal Son is absolute. And only one of ours is. But, you know, in the eyes of the Father, there is no difference. He's no respecter of persons. Right. Absolute is absolute. That's the only way He sees us, through the absolute dimension. Just like He sees the Son. Just like He sees the conjoint actor. Just like He sees the consummator of universe destiny. Just like He sees God the absolute. On and on.
The Son, even though He doesn't have a direct relationship to matter, if mind is the link between spirit and matter, He has a relationship to mind.
We talked about, I think we talked about, I mean, you know, through the Father, He can become aware of these things, but not directly. That's my only point. Yeah.
The fact that from the Father and the Son came the Spirit, the third source and center, does that mean that the only portion that came from the Son was the spirit portion?
Yeah, really it's the conjoint actor half that came from the Son. The infinite spirit half came through the aisle from the Father. And of course, that's kind of a real bottom-up individuality point of view, you know, and you kind of immediately are suspicious there's something that you're not considering in that picture. When you get to labeling that side and you call it the infinite spirit, and you also call it the infinite mind, it's like, now, wait a minute. So if this is just the absolute spirit and the absolute aisle, how did I end up with something that has the infinite label on it? I mean, you know, there's some things that you really can only understand when you turn it the other way around and stuff. You know, in some ways, as the infinite mind, that third source and center is above the other ones. It all depends on how you look at it. Yeah. All right, so let's see. That whole bit about the uniqueness of the Father as a personality, just like you have the uniqueness of the Eternal Son as a mind, a minded being. And they both have this very distinct, you know, not immediately understandable. You know, the fact of what their mindedness or the fact of their personality is in defiance of the definition, the basic definition, you know. If personality is individuated, well, if he has unindividuated, well, then that isn't personality. Or mind is the association between, you know, is a result of an association between matter and spirit. Well, there is no association between matter and spirit, so how can there be mind? I mean, see, both of them are the points, as you follow things up in understanding, that's the point at which the definition breaks down from a bottom-up point of view. You know, that's the point at which, you know, the differential that you need for understanding goes away. And I mean, that's true of everything. I mean, you know, they're really, the words spirit and matter really don't have any meaning anymore once you go past the aisle and the Son back to the Father. You know, so, you know, just like we talk about, you follow things up and at some point you really go above father and mother. There really isn't, you know, I mean, that distinction goes away from that vantage point. And so you don't even have that differential to start try to understand things. I mean, everything can be followed back beyond the point of a difference that allows understanding. All right.
The personality of the Paradise Son is absolute and purely spiritual. And this absolute personality is also the divine and eternal pattern. First, of the Father's bestowal of personality upon the conjoint actor, and subsequently of his bestowal of personality upon the myriads of creatures throughout a far-flung universe.
See, there's a simple example. You know, you can call personality spirit pattern. It's like, well, where does it say that? Well, how about like right there? You know, how am I going to understand? He's the eternal pattern. Oh, it means he's an impersonal fact like the aisle? That meaning of the word pattern? Well, no, that's illogical. You know, I mean, you just put two and two together. Yeah, and that's why I always talk about that. On the one hand, you have energy pattern, which we normally just call pattern. And on the other side, you have spirit pattern, like they're saying here, which we normally just call personality. And so we have two words, pattern and personality. But they're really both patterns. Because, of course, there's only one reservoir of pattern. You know, the infinite one. You know? And it's just who's ladling. If the infinite Father ladles it, it's spirit pattern. If the universal controller, which is still the Father, ladles it, then it's energy pattern. But it's one reservoir, you know. Because again, from the person who has the ladle in his hand, there is no distinction between matter and spirit. There's a distinction between his eternal universal fatherness and his universal controllerness. But that's a distinction that's above the distinction between matter and spirit. Between energy and spirit, between these two patterns that we're talking about. You know, you have to always recognize that you have to talk about this stuff. In order to be able to talk about things and understand it, you can't go past the difference that allows understanding, because then your nomenclature breaks down.
Spirit pattern is personality.
The word, one of the ways you could define personality is spirit pattern.
Okay, so when I hear spirit, I think of Father.
But not why don't you think of the eternal Son? He's purely spirit. He's more spirit than the Father.
Who's personality then?
I thought
he was personality.
Yeah, but he's, what did you just say? The Paradise Son is absolute and purely spiritual. And of course, they point this out. I mean, technically, when you are focused in on something that's purely spiritual and you're certain that you're engaging the Father, well, technically you aren't. Technically, what you're engaging is the Eternal Son. You know, when you, like, if you just think of the Universal Father as your spiritual Father, well, in that narrow sense of understanding the Father as your spiritual Father, then the only part of the Father that you're seeing is the part that's hidden by the Eternal Son. I mean, you have every thought like that has to go through the Son to get to the Father. Because all of that spirit expressions, the spirit word, is the eternal Son. I mean, all of the spirit that the Father had that could be expressed is expressed as the eternal Son. So as you're doing that spiritual ascension through Havona, in order to recognize the Father, first you have to recognize the Son. Because as a spirit ascender, seeing along spirit lines of sight, every one of those lines of sight goes through the Son to get to the Father. You know, and there's a lot of ways that they kind of just give you a direct picture of that. You know, literally, you're standing at the center of the Isle of Paradise, you know, the deity presence. And they say that the Father is right at the center, but completely surrounding him, enveloping him, is the eternal Son. And completely enveloping him is the conjoint actor. I mean, so, you know, those sorts of technical things, I mean, initially, you can ignore all that and just imagine, you know, imagine you're seeing directly to the Father. But, you know, occasionally they say, but remember.
Yeah. The word pattern is interesting to me because I think of it as an example of how something is done that is intended to be repeated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I think, isn't that coming next? Let's see. Somewhere right here, they're going to say that. the whole point is that, you know, when you think of your personality as having this purposing potential, you know, that's another way of understanding what that pattern is. There is an absolute of expression of what that potential purposing looks like when it's actualized. That's the eternal Son, the absolute personality.
If you substitute that little phrase that I just said for pattern and read the sentence and say, and this absolute personality is also the divine and eternal example of how it is done that is intended to be repeated.
And I wish somewhere right in here, it's coming up. I mean, basically words to that effect. Yeah, that's very much true. And the only difference is, like, if you see the way energy is purposed, you know, as the power of an oxygen atom, and you notice that purposing is exactly repeated in every oxygen atom. Okay, now there, see, it's energy pattern, and so you see that repeating in this literally separated individuality way. Okay, spirit pattern, personality, and the way you repeat the eternal Son is in the unity sense. There's a repetition of how you take the unity of spirit and purpose it. Just like there's a repetition of how you take the individuality of energy and purpose it. And so if there's a repetition of how your purposing of unity, well, then there's a sense in which when we all start doing that, we all are overlaying on each other and syncing up.
With the pattern of setting it up in the personality realm, the results are variable.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're absolutely unique, you know, these expressions. And again, that's because from a bottom-up point of view, an individuality viewpoint, you can see the individuation and, you know, and it's all perfectly predictable. If we could see from the top down, totally from the top down, you know, we would see a similar thing. That's why in the eyes of the Father, this is all known. From a bottom-up point of view, if I actually exercise my personality, all the divine counselors are going, whoa, where did that come from? Who could predict such a thing? Okay. But is the Father going, whoa, I never would have guessed that. I mean, no. Is the Father surprised? Of course not. Okay. See, so, you know, it's very definitive both ways. And that, again, that just reminds you of how one is the individuality and the other is the unity. And they're only clearly predictable, if you will, discernible, understandable, you know, from that vantage point. So something that's not fully understood unless you're completely at a total top-down point of view, from a bottom-up point of view, it's going to be the deepest of mysteries. That's the beauty of just starting to put these little pieces together. Then you can start to understand. So you need to separate, and then you can understand. And then you can start to get the picture, you know, in your head. Where were we?
Eternal Son.
Okay. Yeah, let's see. Was there anything else there that... no, I think that pretty much does it. But, you know, just notice they keep repeating it. Purely spiritual, entirely, you know, unqualifiedly, you know. They want to really drill that home so that you clearly, you know, get that separate so that you don't muddle things together, because, you know, you need the challenges to understand the Eternal Son in that purely spiritual way. And if there's mystery there, that's the point. You know, don't make him easier to understand by blurring something in that isn't there. You know.
From the bottom up, if some personality, all the personalities in the universe do something that is uniquely cool, uniquely them,
mm-hmm.
it's still recognized as part of that genre.
Sure.
You know the difference between, wow, that's cool, or wow, that's Lucifer. What the hell is he doing?
And that commonality, it's because it's that unity pattern. See, like I was saying, see there, So there's the when you purpose spirit, it makes the fact of spirit definitively manifest. Spirit is unity. See, and there'll be a common recognition that there has been a unique expression of a common fact, the unity of spirit. Okay.
The Eternal Son is truly a merciful minister, a divine spirit, a spiritual power, and a real personality. The Son is the spiritual and personal nature of God made manifest to the universes, the sum and substance of the first source and center, divested of all that which is non-personal, extra-divine, non-spiritual, and pure potential. But it is impossible to convey to the human mind a word picture of the beauty and grandeur of the supernal personality of the Eternal Son. Everything that tends to obscure the Universal Father operates with almost equal influence to prevent the conceptual recognition of the Eternal Son. You must await your attainment of paradise, and then you will understand why I was unable to portray the character of this absolute personality to the understanding of the finite mind. Do you think extra divine is a one-timer?
That's a good point. I don't know. It might be.
Seems like a strange
one. Yeah, it just might be. That reminded me that right at the beginning of this thing, just to let that sink in the way they worded that, the Eternal Son is that infinite personality from whose unqualified personality fetters the Universal Father escaped.
Yeah.
You know, I was playing around with that a couple of weeks ago or so. I mean, just thinking about the literalness of these fetters and muddying up the waters. Remember, I was playing around with that. But notice they want you to, they want you to turn it around, And you might think the Eternal Son is just the coolest of cool, but the Father is going, wow, I'm like in bondage here. So when the Father frees himself from the fetters of unqualified infinity, part of that infinity is the Eternal Son. Okay? And you. And, he has to free himself from everything in order to do what he can do. He has to be completely transcendent. God the Father is God as transcendence. And so, he has to transcend all that eternal Son fact and everything else, because he has to function as that one thing that transcends everything. So he has to pull himself out of the fetters of everything else. God the Father is God as transcendence. And so once you really let that sink in with things like this, that the Eternal Son is a shackle, to the fact of his transcendence, then it should be really, really clear to you just how empty things would be if that's all there was the Father pulling himself out of everything. There has to be God that remains in. There has to be God the Mother.
The last sentence in that first paragraph, they use two terms for the Father. Why the distinction?
My immediate thought is, and we usually you know, use the expression universal father when we're thinking about all the creatures that he's the universally the father for. But in terms of just the doings on paradise, the paradise father of the paradise son, you know, you notice they use that, you know, right immediately after that in the next sentence. You know, think about, you know, there isn't anything else. There really isn't any place yet for the word universal to have any meaning. All there is paradise, and it's not an aisle really in the center of infinity. You know, there's just, you know, there's the amorphous concept of paradise, and within that, there's a paradise father and a paradise son, and Okay, now before we read this next section, let's see if we can, you know, put what we've been working on to some use here, just with the title of the section. Okay, so when you read that title, you should go, the title is not Recognition of the Eternal Son. The title is Realization of the Eternal Son. What's the difference between recognition and realization? You know, first of all, we think it in the levels, level of recognition, the level of realization is above that. So realization happens subsequent to recognition. But, you know, it's, we know that real mean, you know, is a technical word. It's one thing for me to recognize the Eternal Son. It's another thing for me to figure out how to incorporate some measure of that fact into my personal self, to grab it with my personality and realityize it within my personal self, to make that an ongoing part of my personal self, to realize some relationship with the Eternal Son. So just as, you know, if you're thinking technically with that understanding, and you go, wait a minute, realization of the Eternal Son? Wait a minute, I thought the Eternal Son was an existential fact, and I'm an experiential being. I'm not going to somehow grab a hold of existentialness and realityize it within myself. That doesn't make sense. What on earth is this section going to be about? In what way am I going to realize the Eternal Son? It's like, well, maybe I'm thinking about it wrong. Maybe they're not talking about me at all. Maybe it's just somehow him realizing. Oh, but that doesn't really help me either, because when I think about it like that, I mean, I think about potential, actual, real. You know, I think about that experiential process of going from, you know, potential to actual to real. And again, he's an existential fact. So what exactly does this expression mean, the realization of the Eternal Son? I just want, you know, just notice the mystery right up front. But, you know, you can tell I was baiting the whole discussion. You see what's going on here. I mean, for those of us who have, you know, worked through some of these mysteries, and we know that there's more to the Eternal Son than existential. He starts as an existential fact, and then he has experiences relative to Havona. There's experiential nature that's added on to that, and he's not just the Eternal Son, he's the Eternal Mother Son then. There's an experiential nature, and I'm an experiential being. I could possibly realize that. Remember, we read about that. Let me just read that paragraph again. It's in the Mother section. Paper 117, section 6. You know, that core section of the five papers at the end. Where they talk about the mother definitively, the one spot in the book, and they tell you this fact. It's the sixth paragraph up there. On page 1288, for those with a single column. Let me just read it to you, though. So it says, in and through the experience of finality or attainment, the experiential mother qualities of the ascending self become tremendously affected by contact and infusion with the spirit presence of the eternal Son and the mind presence of the infinite spirit, because of course it's the infinite mother spirit also. There's another part to the story. We'll get to that when we talk about the infinite spirit. But so let me just read that again. In and through the experience of finality or attainment, the experiential mother qualities of the ascending self become tremendously affected by contact and infusion with the spirit presence of the eternal Son and the mind presence of the infinite spirit. Then, throughout the realms of finality or activity in the grand universe, there appears a new awakening of the latent mother potential of the Supreme, a new realization of experiential meanings, and a new synthesis of experiential values of the entire ascension career. God the Father seeking, going there, your God the Mother revealing when you go out. Remember when we talked about this paragraph? It's the, here, this is the one spot in the book where they give you a little bit of the technical of what's going on. The culmination of this whole acquirement of mother, God the Mother likeness, so that you can be God the Mother revealing, that whole acquirement process, like they're saying, culminates when you can come into intimate contact with the Mother Deity of the Eternal Mother Son and the Infinite Mother Spirit. And it boosts you up to this next level where you can go out and begin to manifest a measure of the Mother Supreme. It appears that this realization of self, so now we know, when we're talking about the realization, we're talking about us, this realization of the Eternal Son. You're going to be realizing the Eternal Son. It appears that this realization of self will continue in the universe careers of the six stage finaliters until the mother inheritance of the Supreme, what you acquired, the mother likeness you acquired, until the mother inheritance of the Supreme attains to finite synchrony with the adjuster inheritance of the Father. Till your mother likeness and your father likeness are at the same level, full supremacy. And then, of course, you're going to become a seven-stage spirit, transcend the finite and all that. But see, this intriguing period of grand universe function represents the continuing adult career of the ascendant and perfected mortal. You're really past being a child. Right. Okay? See, so that, that's, again, it's the mother section where so many of these things are only revealed directly in this one place.
We not only acquire based on what we've achieved, we acquire what everyone else has achieved as well.
Right. You're more and more, you're becoming a focus point of bigger and bigger holes. WHOLE. That's what allows you to remember when you talk about the dimensionality of personality, you talk about length and depth and breadth. You're ascending up through the local universe. Your breadth is expanding, and finally, when your breadth spans the local universe width, even you're birthed out of the womb, you need a bigger place to grow. You've reached the limits of what that level of the mother can give you. You need a bigger womb, and you keep expanding in breadth until you're birthed out of that womb. And on and on and on you go. You just the dimensional levels that they talk about up there.
They're going to kick you out of the nest.
Right. At some point, little birdie is too big for the nest, and out you go. So with just our insight into things, we become very suspicious just reading this title of this section. Notice how our suspicions are immediately manifest as we start reading.
8, realization of the eternal Son. Concerning identity, nature, and other attributes of personality, the eternal Son is the full equal, the perfect complement, and the eternal counterpart of the universal Father. In the same sense that God is the universal Father, the Son is the universal Mother. And all of us, high and low, constitute their universal family.
Curious that the one spot that they would use that reference is here. There it is, right away. There's the Mother. And so remember, we've talked about this. They use the term universal Mother 2 times in the book. Once to refer here, to the Eternal Mother Son, and once to refer to the finite upholder. I mean, God the Supreme is God the Mother, the universal Mother of all finite creatures. Okay, so and we've talked about that. I mean, they use it in 2 ways. And you're going, well, that's kind of confusing. Well, notice carefully how the sentence is worded. In the same sense that that God is the universal Father, the Son is the universal Mother. Oh, so there's some sense, there's some qualification in the way they're using this. What is that? Well, the Father is purely an existential fact. And that's the sense in which the universal Father is my Father. He's not literally my, biologic father or something like that. I mean, I'm not a Melchizedek son, and and Michael is literally my father. I mean, it's not in that sense. I mean, it's in the existential sense. I mean, there's 2 beings that are prior to everything else, and in that existential sense, for all things to exist, it comes from that relationship. And what is that fundamental relationship? We talked about it earlier on. It's that relationship between the universal creator, the universal Father is the universal creator, and the Eternal Mother Son as the coordinate creator, universal creator, coordinate creator, that fundamental dual sense, they give rise to everything else. All stems from them. And so in that existential sense, they're a universal Father and a universal Mother. But experientially, it's come up several times. I mean, you mentioned about, this very ethereal spirit gravity, spirit presence, of the Eternal Mother Son. I mean, it's not like you're going to ever really feel that. You're just immersed in that subtle ether presence of the, ethereal presence of the Eternal Son. The tangible thing that, that you will come to begin, as we just were reading up there in paper 117, when you're a finaliter, you are going to have a very direct experience of the Universal Mother. You're going to be revealing a measure of her nature to the rest of the universe. You're going to know her. Okay, you're going to experience that fact of motherness, that Universal Mother. God the Supreme is God the Mother, is the Universal Mother, is the experiential fact. But here you have this, in the same sense that we call him the Universal Father, that he's our Universal Father. You can call the Eternal Son that existential Universal Mother, the coordinate creator. Now, and just all we've done in kind of really bringing out the total deity stuff and whatnot is just appreciating that fundamentally the reason that it's even valid to think of them existentially like that is because the Eternal Son is literally has mother, literally has mother type deity. And it's not just, an analogy to male female parents. There is a literalness to that experiential deity of the Eternal Son and the Infinite Spirit. They are the Eternal Mother Son and the Infinite Mother Spirit. But that experiential fact is so transcendently subtle that not even the Havona natives, where the Eternal Mother Son and the Infinite Mother Spirit got that experience, directly experience it. They only get a sense of its existence, through that first Creator Son, that sort of makes that fact tangible to them. So, you know, even for high, you know, perfect beings, you know, beings that existed before time, yeah. I mean, there's just, you know, you just know conceptually that that's experiential deity, but it's not like it's an experiential deity that's easily experienceable, okay, by anyone except them. And so in that sense, oh, this whole realization thing, there is a realization of the Eternal Son, you know, as himself, but that potentiality to actuality, to reality, realization, that experiential deity of the Eternal Son is sort of only known up there amongst the Paradise Fellows. All right, so sure enough, you know, the statement of the Universal Mother is just right where you had a suspicion it might be.
To appreciate the character of the Son, you should study the revelation of the divine character of the Father. They are forever and inseparably one. As divine personalities, they are virtually indistinguishable by the lower orders of intelligence. They are not so difficult of separate recognition by those whose origin is in the creative acts of the deities themselves. Beings of nativity in the central universe and on paradise discern the Father and the Son not only as one personal unity of universal control, but also as two separate personalities functioning in definite domains of universe administration.
So, you know, like just what they're saying there directly, and then something kind of between the lines, what we were just referring to. I mean, a great example of someone who has their origin in the creative acts of the deities themselves, a creator son. You know, for a creator son, literally, mom and dad, okay, are the eternal mother son and the universal father. Okay? You know, they're literally mom and dad. You know,
brings it down to us pretty closely.
Right. Yeah. Right. But, yeah. So, you know, not only like what they're referring to there, you know, this real distinction between father and son, but even that father-motherness, see, you know, has an intimacy to a creator son. So that's a little reminder of at what kind of a level there's, you know, the internal nature of a creator son is. After all, like I said, I mean, how did the Havona natives really benefit from the bestowal that gave the Eternal Son that experience, you know, that bestowal within Havona? It was through that first Creator Son. See, so that Creator Son, you know, must have a pretty intimate connection to that experiential deity fact. Yeah. Or how could he be the conduit by which it becomes manifest? Yeah. Okay, so the Creator Sons, you know, it gives you... Right, it gives you a little reminder of at what level they are and how they can end up being in the ultimate Trinity, and you know, and having that connection to anyway. So, but that aside, I mean, it's the main thing that they were wanting to bring out is that you know you are going to be able as we get up there. You know, to start to distinguish it. So you know that that's what's going to happen as you're going through the circuits of Havona. As you're going through the fifth, the fourth, and the third circuits of Havona, you finally distinguish the infinite spirit from the other two. And then as you're going through the fourth circuit, you finally distinguish the eternal son from the father. And then finally on the third circuit, you know, you directly can recognize the father. So you peel back the onion. You know, you're going through Havona. And
those natives are getting something from us getting that.
Right. Yeah.
While we're getting.
Yep. All right. You know, there's no way they can have that experience themselves. You know, they were able to distinguish it, like they're pointing out, just innately. But then when they see us discovering that distinction, acquiring that distinction, there's a super additive consequence, and they gain something that they didn't have. And, yeah. Exactly.
The highest concept of God you'll ever have is our local son, is Michael.
Yeah, and even the highest possible is the Supreme Being, you know, sort of as a finite being.
From the bottom up, I mean, we're studying the Father as best we can and all we're getting is a concept that is already evident there in Michael.
And how handy is it that he's father and son downstep and stuck together as one? You know, so, right, I mean, in a direct experiential way, I mean, you know, this is way off. But you know, they give it to us now because it's important to begin to at least conceptualize beyond your experience, conceptualize beyond the local universe. One day you are going to leave the sun behind. As, you know, icky as that sounds. You know, it's like, I don't want to do that. But one day you're going to have to be brave enough to do that. You're going to have to leave mom and dad behind.
Well, they're kicking me out of the nest.
I'm 18 and I'm out of here. I just don't understand it. You know, I got health care until I'm 26 now. And
I'm trying to figure out what could Havana natives gain. And I was thinking, well, if we're realizing what they would be getting is an appreciation. Mm-hmm. Something that they couldn't have because they already realized. But when they see us experiencing these realizations,
it's different.
Then that gives them a new appreciation of what they
certainly that, and you can take it to the next notch too. I mean, like I was trying to stress, I mean, the only reason that you can acquire anything, you know, as an experiential being, is because of some relationship with experiential deity. Yeah. Yeah, that was kind of the whole point. I mean, if you're going to acquire this from the sun, there has to be some experiential deity there. It's sort of just between the lines of telling you that. So, you know, you're an experiential being. The Havana native is an experiential being. I mean, there's a literalness to what, you know, that relationship. They literally realityize something. You know, their internal nature changes when they engage you. It's not just an abstract, you know, experience. It's literalized. They are no longer the being they used to be after you pass by. You know, they grow in your wake. I mean, that's true in this, so it's this complex interacting system where everyone is acquiring from everyone else. And, you know, the one point where that really becomes very definitively manifest that you have this kind of literal linkage going on is when you and a Havana native come together in this perfect synchrony and you give rise to a creature trinitized son. I mean, that means there is a literal linkage there. Yeah. Energy is being exchanged, okay?
A whole bunch of things
happen. Right. Yeah.
Well, so it gives a whole other dimension to the quality of sharing. Yeah. The shared experience, it's that super additive thing.
Right. It just can't be acquired any other way. I mean, and you know, you can't quite understand exactly what it is that they're acquiring, but you can just think of it as a reciprocal of what you know you're acquiring. You know, you're going through there as a perfecting being, and they're a perfect being. The super additive consequence, from your point of view, of the relationship between a perfecting being and a perfect being is a perfected being. What you acquire by that relationship is what needs to be added to a perfecting fact to make it a perfected fact. You literally acquire. So they're acquiring some sort of reciprocal thing from you.
Some voids need to be filled super additively.
Yeah. And the real significant ones are all that way. Because those are the only things that we're missing from the I Am, is what we now see as voids that can only be filled by a super additive consequence. All the ones that can be filled by additivity, we're actually already there. It's just an illusion. The only true voids in the I Am are the results of true relationship, the super additive consequence. That's the only thing that was actually missing from the concept of the I Am. For instance, perfected beings were not in the I Am. Yep. Exactly. Okay, so.
As persons, you may conceive of the Universal Father and the Eternal Son as separate individuals, for they indeed are. But in the administration of the universes, they are so intertwined and interrelated that it is not always possible to distinguish between them. When, in the affairs of the universes, the Father and the Son are encountered in confusing interassociations, it is not always profitable to attempt to segregate their operations. Merely recall that God is the initiating thought and the Son is the expressionful word. In each local universe, this inseparability is personalized in the divinity of the Creator Son, who stands for both Father and Son to the creatures of 10 million inhabited worlds.
Just notice one little fun thing they did there, how they flipped that around, gave you another perspective on the Creator Son. We just did the basic individuality viewpoint where we have a universal creator and a coordinate creator, and mom and dad get together and they have a creator son. But look what they just did there, actually. They said, well, you could think about it the other way. Think about all the creator sons as being the father-son stuff stuck together that can't be pulled apart. See? And you take the part of that whole father-son stuff that can be pulled apart, and you end up with the universal father and the eternal son, and what's left behind is all the parts that could, the pieces that couldn't be pulled apart, and they're called creator sons. See, they flipped it around on you. That vantage point has some truth, too. It's like whether or not you think about the Paradise Trinity from bottom up or top down. Just notice how they slip little things in that. They're constantly trying to get you to think about both ways at the same time, see? Even up here, way far away from saying that directly, like they do up in the Supreme Papers, it's just woven in all the time.
The Eternal Son is infinite, but he is approachable through the persons of his Paradise Sons and through the patient ministry of the Infinite Spirit. Without the bestowal service of the Paradise Sons and the loving ministry of the creatures of the Infinite Spirit, beings of material origin could hardly hope to attain the Eternal Son. And it is equally true. With the help and guidance of these celestial agencies, the God-conscious mortal will certainly attain paradise and sometimes stand in the present personal presence of this majestic Son of Sons. Even though the Eternal Son is the pattern of mortal personality attainment, you find it easier to grasp the reality of both the Father and the Spirit because the Father is the actual bestower of your human personality, and the Infinite Spirit is the absolute source of your mortal mind. But as you ascend in the paradise path of spiritual progression, the personality of the Eternal Son will become increasingly real to you, and the reality of his infinitely spiritual mind will become more discernible to your progressively spiritualizing mind. Never can the concept of the Eternal Son shine brightly in your material or subsequent moronchal mind. Not until you spiritize and commence your spirit ascension will the comprehension and the personality of the personality of the Eternal Son begin to equal the vividness of your concept of the personality of the Creator Son of Paradise origin who, in person and as a person, one time incarnated and lived on your rancha as a man among men.
So, you know, they threw in that little bit about just so that you would immediately recognize that this the Eternal Son is downstepped to something that you can engage. You know, they're just reminding you of the bringing that downstepping all the way to the seventh step, you know, of the actual bestowal, but back it up a little bit, you know, even before the seven bestowals, he still is a descending son. He's a downstepped expression of the Eternal Son. And so he makes the otherwise inscrutable fact of the Eternal Son manifest.
Throughout your local universe experience, the Creator Son, whose personality is comprehensible by man, must compensate for your inability to grasp the full significance of the more exclusively spiritual but nonetheless personal, Eternal Son of Paradise. As you progress through Arvantan and Havona, as you leave behind you the vivid picture and deep memories of the Creator Son of your local universe, the passing of this material and Marantia experience will be compensated by ever-enlarging concepts and intensifying comprehension of the Eternal Son of Paradise, whose reality and nearness will ever augment as you progress paradise-ward.
There it is, just referring to what I was mentioning about leaving, having to leave the nest. And just notice that I find it very interesting how challenging they purposely construct that. As you progress through Orbit Nirvana, as you leave behind you the vivid picture and deep memories of the Creator Son, is purposely piling it on like that. It's an interesting technique of getting you to feel a big emptiness. And they're saying, but fear not. No matter how big that emptiness feels when we speak to you like that, that's going to be completely filled by an experience that you don't even have yet. And it will be so cool, you won't believe it. But, see, again, the literalness, in order to have an experience, you have to have a capacity for the experience. You have to actually create this conceptual void so that it can be filled by a new experience. If you don't create that unfilled space first, create this separation between you and the Creator Son, there's no place for the Eternal Son to enter in. The Creator Son pervades your whole space. You need to have the courage to expand it to a bigger space so that there's room for the Eternal Son to fit in. Like you were saying, right now, it's true of the Father too. Right now, there's really no place, there's not the tiniest little crack where the Eternal Son or the Universal Father can get in, because these downstepped expressions completely pervade the whole volume, that is you. But once the breadth, expands their diameter, expands beyond their diameter, now there's finally a place for the others to come in, and instantly, of course, there's never actually a void. The instant the tiniest crack opens, something higher begins to fill it.
Forsaking something so that something else can.
Yeah, and it's just beginning to strike step with that kind of a dynamic, fearless self. That is constantly, being allowed to dissolve and be reformed bigger the next time. And then dissolved and reformed bigger the next time. And on you grow. You go. Where you're holding on to that self. Which you can do, remember, you have absolute free will. You can say, you're not going to grow me. I'm not going to let this self dissolve. I'm going to hold it in a static state. Well, if you achieve making it static, what's that called? Death.
Yeah.
Real death. Yeah. You don't want to do that. You got to have the courage to let it dissolve. And coincidentally, one of those times when the self dissolves, the body dissolves underneath it.
Yeah.
But, it's really no difference. You're going to have, every time you leave a mansion world, not only does the self dissolve, but the whole body dissolves underneath it. And they got to build a new body for you again. But even when your body isn't dissolving, the self is always going, you want to be, strike step with the respiration of the cosmos. The master universe respirates, and so must you if you're going to be like the Father. Dissolve, reform. Dissolve, reform. You have to let the self constantly die and be born again into a new day in order to grow. And if you just reflect on that, it should encourage you to grow your faith into trust. You can't just do that. You can't let yourself dissolve with just that faint flicker of faith that's trying to antidote fear. You need to trust. rock solid. Knowing that when that self dissolves, you will be reformed. You won't go away, you know. But that fear in the primitive man, where he feared to go to sleep even, because he thought if he let it dissolve, it would never come back again. Just take that up in a notch. It's the same fear that pervades man in modern man. It's this fear of letting God dissolve you and then reform you anew.
I don't think all of us have that.
But just, but just notice it's a very common thing. How much is how afraid is mankind of death, you know? And maybe he would be less afraid of death if he recognized that all of life has to be like death. Death isn't something very different. That's the actual fact of a true life in the cosmos is a self that's constantly dissolving and reforming. So just taking on that bigger perspective of yourself.
The Eternal Son is a grand and glorious personality. Although it is beyond the powers of the mortal and material mind to grasp the actuality of the personality of such an infinite being, doubt not, he is a person. I know whereof I speak. Times almost without number, I have stood in the divine presence of this Eternal Son, and then journeyed forth in the universe to execute his gracious bidding. Indicted by a divine counselor, assigned to formulate this statement depicting the Eternal Son of Paradise.
So we'll move on to a little bit more about the relationship, bestowal, and like I pointed out, I mean, the very first thing about how there's actual connection, that spirit gravity, you see, is the very first thing that comes up. Maybe just wanted a little comment along those lines. You know, when they're talking about all of this growing to the point where you can actually directly personally experience the Eternal Son standing there in paradise like he has times almost without number. Remember that the very first thread of that begins long before you're actually standing there, long before you get to the fourth circuit of Avona. You know, and why they call them the psychic circles in parallel to the circuits of Avona. Mm-hmm. You know, as a first circler, you have that first measure of direct linkage, that first little thread of direct linkage to the Eternal Mother Son. That's what makes you a first circler, like we've talked about recently. So to know that it's a process that begins almost from the very beginning. It'll be a long time before you start to really become that conscious of it. If you think about it, how could it be any other way? I mean, he just told me he was an infinite personality. I better get started really early if I'm going to somehow, achieve that. Even if I imagine a trillion-year journey, that's still just a trillion years, and it's an infinite personality. So you do. The moment that you... the relationship can start, it does. The moment that you have a direct linkage to spirit, his spirit gravity starts drawing you, and it draws you upward and inward to that first measure of intimacy as a first circler, and it just builds and builds from there.
As you pull away from this planet and look back, our planet encircling our sun might be going it might be going so fast from a different perspective. And we think of a trillion years as being so long, but yet the further away you get,
it's an electron cloud.
Yeah,
right, exactly, right. I mean, we've talked about that's that, the whole thing about your awareness of time, your mindful sense of time, that what you conceive of as a moment, the amount of the whole that you can grasp gets bigger. And so your moment objectively is bigger. Subjectively, it's still just a moment. Okay? But objectively, you know, you're grabbing a hold of this whole great big chunk that for us is a year. For them, it's a moment.
I always have loved that statement where that you can determine how mature a personality is based on the time unit that they're capable of perceiving of as real.
Right. And that's just, you know, how much have you eternalized your consciousness? And, yeah. So,
It just this last thing here, it sounds like it's just the divine counselor talking about his himself. But think about it. If he's saying that I was dispatched by the Eternal Son to your mud bowl to do this job.
Yep.
That's a direct connection with the infinite spirit, I mean, Eternal Son, is thinking about us. Go talk to these people and tell them what's going on from our point of view.
Yes, yep, very important, you know, and literally on the dirt ball he was, you know, I mean, that, you know, these people literally came here, these individuals. And again, just that, you know, in that thought, you know, that's what we were referring to, you know, Gene, when I was talking about what the Eternal Son can see. He has absolute spirit vision. There's no relativity in it. So the fact that, the measure of spirit that you have is ever so tiny, like they said, you're almost wholly material, it doesn't matter that measure is tiny and someone else's measure is huge. There's absolutely no difference in the vision. You know, there's no... Because it's small and far away doesn't mean it has any perspective that disappears, so it disappears in the distance. There's no distance between. So, I mean, everything, big and small, has zero distance and fills his entire field of view. Yeah. He can see you directly.
This execution of his gracious bidding would not have, the timing of it is such that he's looking at our planet and saying, the capacity is there.
So ask yourself, what does he see that maybe we don't? Maybe we should try to see as he sees us.
Because even though the book wasn't published till 55, it started happening earlier.
Right.
And never mind that...
Well, how long ago? I mean, outside of time.
Exactly. Right. See, that's the thing you want to always come to. That's exactly what I was just going to bring up. The coolness of his that is from his, he sees us from eternity.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's got to see both in and out.
Right.
See, I mean, there's a mystery seat, you know, I was just going to bring up. You know, when he says he executes his gracious bidding, think about the mystery of that statement. This being that goes out and futzes around in time, somehow got...
Futzes around.
I mean, if he's interacting with me, he's futzing. I mean, that's just the way it is. What the heck is he going to do with me besides futz? Somehow he got those marching orders from eternity. What the heck? All right. Yeah, and therein lies, you know, it's just like a personalized adjuster showing up. What the heck? How does that connect with time? Yep. All right. Let's take a moment here.